to 7 p.m.
Thanks for listening to
Pick the Power Radio.
This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh yes, vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. They're located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also made possible by the Four Bay Aquatic Center in Oroville. Just minutes away from Chico, the Four Bay Aquatic Center offers rentals, on-the-water classes with stand-up paddle boards, windsurfers, canoes, hydro bikes, pedal boats, and sit-in kayaks. That sounds like fun. There are also aquatic day camps and rowing camps for kids and seasonal memberships. It opened May 26th. Visit fourbayaquaticcenter.com for more details. Every day is fun day at the Four Bay. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM, or streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about representing animal victims in the courtroom, how farmers in Canada are switching from animal agriculture to growing plants to feed people directly, and I'm going to read the trades for you, showing you how the business of sheep milk is being industrialized straight from the California Farm Bureau Federation newspaper. Over to you, Jeannie.
All right. Thank you, Danny. Fox News recently reported on University of Connecticut law students and law professor Jessica Rubin, who are at the forefront of implementing a groundbreaking Connecticut law that allows judges to appoint advocates in cases of animal abuse. Law students at UConn are among those acting as advocates in Hartford Superior Court under Professor Rubin's supervision. They are currently acting as advocates in a case of dogfighting and also in a case of cat abuse. Many states have victims advocates or child advocates. We have these programs here in Chico. And these are people in the judicial system who represent those affected by crime or abuses. But the state of Connecticut has created legal advocates for abused animals, an experiment being watched across the nation for signs of success. In Connecticut, there are 8 approved volunteer advocates, 7 lawyers, and Jessica Rubin, who is a University of Connecticut law professor. It's up to a judge to decide whether or not to appoint an animal advocate, but an animal advocate can be requested as needed by either prosecutor or defense attorney. In the first 6 months of the law, advocates have been appointed in 5 cases so far. Every state in the nation has the problem of overburdened courts that understandably prioritize human cases over animal cases in allocating resources. This animal advocate program is a great way to fill that gap. And in reading about it, you know who opposed this legislation? It sounds common sense to me, right? Like, okay, we don't have enough staff. We have volunteers coming in. With some legal expertise, let's go ahead and use them. And yet, the agency, the group that opposed this legislation was the American Kennel Club.
Oh, how surprising!
which said their basis for that objection was they said it could result in confusion over who is responsible for an animal and limit the rights of animal owners, I would say animal breeders, including in cases where someone else is charged with the abuse. So,
I think it said this could lower our profit by breeding animals.
It could expose what we're doing.
Right.
It could. So for folks who don't know, there are puppy mills and kitten mills that register their animals under the AKC or the Cat Fanciers Association. And these animals are not show ring quality, but they do bring in extra money because they're, quote, papered. So this is what's going on here, where the AKC wants to fight this kind of animal advocacy. Anyway, supporters say that the issues that are raised by the American Kennel Club are actually easily mediated by the judge, who can step in and say, no, you're not presenting enough information on this particular case, and we need more unbiased information.
Basically, judges know how to deal with advocates and the law, and
yeah,
they can handle it the way they handle everything else.
Right. So, anyway, the law was created by the Connecticut legislature and went into effect in late 2016 in October. It's known as Desmond's Law, and it was named for the dog who had been beaten, starved, and strangled by his, quote, owner, who had admitted to the violence but had managed to avoid jail time under a probation program for first-time offenders that allowed his record to be expunged. So that's sort of a grave omission, right? If someone is guilty of this crime and admits to it, and yet he's able to have it removed in the case of a serious animal abuse. I mean, beating, starving, and strangling an animal, that is not like mild animal abuse. That is intentional. Anyway, UConn law student Taylor Hansen is one of the volunteer animal advocates this year, and she was one of the first animal advocates to testify in court with her law professor, Jessica Rubin, by her side. She's a mentor. The case that Taylor was participating in was a dog fighting case involving pit bulls. And so Hansen, in this scenario, is an official party to the case. And in her role as an animal advocate, she's allowed to do and invited to do investigative work that prosecutors often don't have time for, such as interviewing veterinarians and consulting other witnesses and filling out the case on behalf of the animal. Animal advocates can also make arguments, write briefs, and make recommendations to the judge, which is what Taylor Hansen did in this case. So as in her role as this newly developing expert as an animal advocate, Hansen described the abuse the dog suffered, linked in studies that connected animal and human abuse, which are well-known, and explained why she believed that the man accused of raising these dogs to fight should be barred from the probation leniency program that played a role in the original Desmond's Law case. So Hansen argued in this case that if the defendant's record were expunged, were wiped clean through the rehabilitation program, there would be nothing to prevent him from getting back into dog fighting. So the outcome was the judge listened to her input and agreed that the charges were serious, but found that the crime in this case was not on the list that would automatically prevent the defendant from participating in the probation leniency program. So he wasn't an exception. But based on her arguments and her suggestions, the judge imposed conditions to bar that defendant from owning, breeding, or having dogs in his home for at least the next 2 years. He will also have to perform 200 hours of community service, but he is excluded from doing any community service involving animals.
So it sounds like without the advocate, his record would have been expunged. He would have served less punishment, and he would have probably went right back to this because he had no incentive not to.
Yeah, and also if he were offered community service, he could have done it at the Humane Society,
right,
working with dogs. I mean, there might be a value in that, but I think that would have to be carefully managed for someone who's already abused animals to go back and work with them. So animal advocates note that only 20% of animal abuse cases in Connecticut are prosecuted, in many of those cases end with similar outcomes that leave no record of the abuse. So if nothing else, the animal advocates at least will create a better record,
right.
Trial record of what happens to these folks that are being tried for these animal abuse crimes. And that will have an impact on the offender. But also, in terms of data and statistics, we'll have a much clearer picture as the years go by of re-offense, I think, is the
right
term, right?
Yeah, I mean, considering, as you stated here, and as has been shown by many serial killers and violent people, you don't even have to be a serial killer, obviously, people that hurt animals, you know, they'll hurt people too. We, of course, believe hurting either of them is bad. But the fact that we have this indicator and it's often untracked is just a failure, you know, of the system. And also, this type of egregious abuse was not even on the list to prevent probation. And so maybe also by building up these records, it becomes known then, okay, these guys can't get probation, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, criminology is about accumulating data and statistics. And if records are wiped, we have missing data.
Yeah. I mean, you know, dog fighting is just a terrible thing, and anyone participating in it is, you know, basically, you know, scum of the earth, as they say. I don't like to get too harsh on that, but, you know, if you're involved in it, if you gamble on it, if you witness it, it's just a horrible, horrible thing.
Yeah, I don't think we have too much dog fighting here in the North State.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to, well, this was in Connecticut, but anyway, it tends to be more a southern thing.
Right.
But also, there's cockfighting.
Right.
And so animal advocates can step in on these kinds of cases. I would not be surprised to see California develop this type of program very soon.
Right. That'd be great.
So, yeah. Just want to say that law professor Jessica Rubin worked with the Connecticut State Representative Diana Urban to draft and lobby for this law. And good for her. It was passed in October of 2016.
And, you know, animals are so underrepresented in the law and in law schools and in curriculums that any move forward to make animal law more present and useful is great.
This is a big deal. This is no doubt a big deal that you can have advocates for basically innocent victims, just as we have advocates for children and the elderly in our courts. And I'll just say Taylor Hansen, the animal advocate, she's the vice president of the University of Connecticut chapter of the Student Animal Legal Defense Fund. And there's chapters associated with several law schools in California. So that's why I'm not surprised. I won't be surprised to report on this development on this type of representation in the coming years. And if folks are interested, there's a chapter at the Hastings School of Law in San Francisco and the McGeorge School of Law at the University of the Pacific. So both of those are highly regarded California law schools. So, yeah, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. And we're going to have Danny Toms start with a new feature. We're going to try it out.
All right. So we've got a new feature. We're going to read from the trades for you, and that's a bit of industry speak. We're reading the trade magazines of the industries that we monitor, or I should say Genie monitors. And so we're going to share news straight from the farmers so that our listeners can judge for themselves what California animal agriculture is all about. One of the common response vegans is here when we explain why people should drop dairy goes something like, oh yeah, I hate the dairy industry, that's why I choose goat milk or organic free-range goat milk or whatever. They also tend to reply with, yeah, cows are treated horribly, that's why I eat cheese made from sheep milk because it's a smaller industry and they treat the sheep nicely. And usually, you know, this isn't that people are mean, this is, you know, they're falling victim to the way the industry presents themselves and to the hiding of the information. So we have some news for you that farmers always want to maximize their income. There really aren't, you know, volunteer farmers or zero balance, no profit farmers, right? I mean, and that's kind of fair. People want to make money. And so that is what farmers are doing. Even if they start out as a very small family farm and very well-intentioned, there's always pressure to make profit, to get bigger, to have a little more of a nest egg. And, you know, profit begets profit. That's the society we live in, or profit-seeking. Our current animal agriculture industries all started out as small operations, right? If you go back 50, 100, 150 years, but sometime in the last 50 to 60 years, economic pressures caused most of these small operators to either sell or to grow big. And nowhere is this more true than in the animal agricultural aspect.
Yeah, we're not talking about economic pressure. Oh, well, we are talking about economic pressures where farmers get stuck in big mortgages or whatever. But we're also talking about economic advantages. We've talked many times about grazing leases that lower the cost of,
right.
of business, subsidy programs that lower the cost of business and enable this, these larger operations to grow. So,
right.
So
government-pegged insurance rates, etc. So today's report comes from the weekly trade publication of the California Farm Bureau Federation Ag Alert, which bills itself as the, quote, newspaper for California agriculture. Here are some excerpts and commentary from a November 2016 article titled, Sheep Dairy Focuses on Improving Its Productivity. So we encourage you to hear how farmers treat their animals in their own words. Be aware that any sympathy you may be feeling for these animals is in your own heart, and it's pretty clear it's not necessarily in the farmer's heart, who only cares about these animals as a product and something to sell and make a living. So we hope that their words come across clear to you. Writer Cecilia Parsons starts out her article from the California Farm Bureau Federation Ag Alert like this. Attention to nutrition, structural soundness, and genetics is putting more milk in the tank at Unity Creamery. This Denair area sheep dairy's path to productivity and goal of profitability is based on a model followed by successful milk cow dairies. Unity Creamery's owner-operator, Andrea Mangini, said that demand for sheep milk in California far outweighs current supply, and that won't change until management is focused on improving milk production.
Oh, it's so mechanized.
Yeah. Have any mothers out there focused on improving milk production to increase supply for their children? Something to think about. Her original ewes were purchased from the University of Wisconsin Spooner Research Facility. This is quoting it still. They were adequate, Mangini said, but she could see where improvement in size, structure, and udder design could make them more efficient producers.
Yeah, we can build a better engine.
Yeah. Improving udder design has also helped efficiency in the milking parlor. Teat placement is important to milk output. Teats higher on the side of the udder do not allow the udder to be completely emptied at milking. This not only lowers output, but by not emptying the udder, it signals the ewe to make less milk each day.
This is a description of an animal machine.
Yeah, I mean, it's mechanization. One can only speculate how you improve udder design, what type of breeding or, modifications are made. And if you think about any time people talk about, well, maybe we could do some genetic selection on this baby. Let's just make sure I want to have a boy or a girl. It's outrage at that minimal testing. If you were talking about I do some GMO modification on my kid, make his head bigger, his muscles stronger, it's not even up for discussion. Yet this is, and also, they could probably still claim that this is GMO-free because they're going to naturally modify the udder, and people will happily drink their sheep milk thinking it's more natural than cow milk.
Yeah, it's breeding selection to create a better machine to create more money.
Ewes at Unity Creamery are milked in a parlor much like ones found on cow dairies, only scaled to sheep size. Twice a day, the ewes come into the parlor where they're fed grain and hooked up to a milking machine. Between milkings, the ewes are on a dry lot and have free choice feed.
Right, so these are not sheep that are being grazed on a pasture with grass. These are the dry lot milk production means that the animals are in basically just a dirt lot with a fence and a feed trough and water and, crap all over the place. So.
Right, the kind of place you don't want to hang out.
It's similar to the feedlots we described for on I-5.
So. Making milk for a longer time period is essential to a profitable sheep dairy operation, Mangini said. Dairy cows are typically milked for about 10 months before drying off and calving. One reason for shorter sheep dairy lactation is seasonality of breeding.
So they're natural breeding cycles.
Right. And so there's something wrong with that. We've got to figure out how we can fix that too, right? We need more.
Well, here's what's wrong with it.
We need more sheep there. We can't feed them for free for 6 months. They need to pay for themselves by milking longer, owner-operator Mangini said.
Right. So there you go. Again, they're a machine that has to be rested for 6 months between lambs. And so that is unprofitable. So we must fix this. This is how animal agriculture works. This
right.
is how we get to these cruel and inhumane systems on a larger scale for pigs, for dairy cows, and the feedlots that we see on I-5, because profit is king.
Yeah, and I think we've done a show in the past how a lot of this started with the 50s and 60s and the pork producers and how they really started some of the mechanization and crating and quote-unquote efficiency and productivity. So Mangenia follows a regime of raising the lambs separately, sending fresh ewes back to the milk string shortly after giving birth. Most sheep dairies, Mangini said, leave the lambs on the ewe for at least 30 days, which means they lose out on that milk production.
See, so just 1 month of having a baby lamb nursed from her mom is losing out on profit.
Yeah, get that baby out of there.
And so this thinking applies to dairy milk, too. So if definitely. You are still drinking milk and you think that vegans are weird for, you know, not drinking dairy, not wanting to be part of this industry, this is why.
Right. Continuing the quotes, at birth, each lamb receives heat-treated colostrum and is fed individually for 2 weeks until it is transitioned to an automatic feeder.
Right. So colostrum is the first milk that any nursing mammal produces. It's full of antibodies and is essential for a baby to thrive if she doesn't get the colostrum, which has beneficial nutrients and bacteria, then that's an animal that won't grow as fast,
right.
Or a human baby that won't grow as fast.
And it's not nursing it. It seems like they're milking it, they're heat treating it, maybe to kill diseases.
Yeah, they're worried about viruses.
And then refeeding it back to it. I mean, we've all seen The Matrix, and that's basically what this is. You all have seen those, the cat food feeders, you know, for when you go out of town. Well, we'll take your two-day-old baby and leave it with that.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, it's just... it's just a shame. It's so mechanized, and this is industry language. These are farmers talking to
right.
other farmers. It's not them talking to us, because they will use very different language to market this product to, right. to people.
All right, what's this last quote? After weaning, ram lambs are marketed, and the ewe lambs are selected for replacements. They are bred at 7 months to a year of age to create the next generation of lambs for this machinery, which they are replacing. So yeah, it's, you know, the language is Orwellian, and you see that a lot in the industry. It's very intentional. It's not just for the public, it's for each other. It's reinforcing that this is how things are, and don't worry about this. This is just, you know, we're conducting a business.
Yeah, you know, this is, I intentionally like to let our audience hear information and news that's not from PETA or Mercy for Animals, and it's not about surprise undercover video. This is routine, normal, and highly cruel.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah.
So,
it's
yeah.
You know, it's not any form of life any being wants. So
yeah.
What's next, Jeannie?
I'm going to jump to the calendar because there's a few nice things that I want folks to know about.
All right.
So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, and we've been hearing about the growing sheep milk industry, which is mostly used for cheese. So if you're after cheese, sheep-based cheese, please think twice.
Well, I'm sure goat cheese is fine, right?
I'm sure goat milk is... Goats are going to be subjected to are probably already subjected to the same pressure.
Right.
Anyway, summer's here. Let's move forward, and there are better options than animal-based food for y'all to enjoy. And want to point out that on June 9th, Animal Place is holding a rescued hen adoption event on Friday between 12 and 3 p.m. This is part of a mass rescue that they did from an egg farm. They rescued 1,400 hens that are about 2 years old and a mix of white leghorns and red sex-link hens. And they are ready for adoption into permanent homes. So to find out more, go ahead and check out animalplace.org and go to their adoption page, and you can sign up to give these critters a new home. And you don't have to be vegan or vegetarian to adopt these guys. You just have to agree not to eat the hens that you adopt, but to provide them care. Saturday, June 10th, the Red Bluff Vegans are at it again. They're having their Southern Comfort Food-themed vegan potluck from 5 to 7 at a private residence. So go ahead and check out their Facebook group, Red Bluff Vegans, to get the exact address information when you RSVP to their Facebook event. And then on Sunday, June 11th, I want to give a shout-out for AK Press, which we have some folks here locally in Chico now that they have their warehouse here, and the Pageant Theater. They're going to be giving a benefit show on June 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. of the movie called If a Tree Falls. And it is a benefit for Marius Mason, who is a transgender anarchist, environmental, and animal rights activist who's currently serving 22 years in federal prison for acts of property damage carried out in defense of the planet. The documentary, If a Tree Falls, is a Sundance Award-winning, Oscar-nominated documentary on the Earth Liberation Front and the Green Scare. AK Press will also have a book table at the pageant with great books from their list at bargain prices, and all proceeds will go to Marius.
I have to interject and say that here we have 22 years in federal prison for property damage, but the aforementioned guy who was breeding and killing dogs in fighting rings got probation.
No, it's supposed to be a very good documentary. It's part coming-of-age tale, part cops and robbers thriller, and it talks about Daniel McGowan, who was one of the founders, early members of Earth Liberation Front. So If a Tree Falls, it'll ask hard questions about environmentalism, activism, and the way we define terrorism. So that's 7 to 10 p.m. at the Pageant Theater, benefit screening to benefit Marius Mason of the movie If a Tree Falls. So. Yeah, thanks to AK Press for organizing that and putting it together. What else do we have? So all the way down in Sacramento, I just want to give a shout out to the Burger Patch, which is a pop-up restaurant that serves all plant-based comfort foods. They're going to be having a pop-up for the Sacramento Kings NBA Draft Block Party in Sacramento on June 22nd from 4 to 9 p.m. They'll be serving up the new Beyond Burger, which is a plant-based, very meaty fake hamburger that you can get. You can get it at Safeway now, but they're going to be grilling it up and serving it. And that'll be on L Street between 18th and 19th Streets on June 22nd. From 4 to 9 p.m. I highly recommend it. They had an earlier one, I think, at the end of May, and everybody was raving about how good it was.
Awesome, and I think most people can agree that the Kings need all the help they can get. So
you would know that better than me. I don't follow sports, but I do follow vegan food. So anyway, we have one last. That's it for the calendar. If you have an event or other news you want to share, please send me an email or comment on the Non-Human Radio Facebook page and let me know about it. So we have one last bit of business to take care of. And that is the animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
Our quote this week is from Andrea Mangini, director of Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, owner-operator at a sheep milk dairy in the Central Valley, who was quoted as saying, "We can't feed them for free for 6 months. They need to pay for themselves by milking longer."
Oh, my gosh. That's awful.
Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFRR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand for her engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next. I think I hear we have a special host for that.
Yeah, I'm going to be filling in for her. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFRR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFRR, its board, or its staff.
Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen over and over again all night long, you can find our show at kzfr.org. This is Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.